for the topics that I was asked to speak about. This is kind of a vein of thought that I do feel passionate about, and I think it's an overlooked topic in some ways, in some places, and so I'm glad that we get a chance to talk about it today and for the next 3 days, because I hope that what we are doing as God's people is enjoying the thought of living in the light of His presence. I know in some ways that's an intimidating and a scary thought, and we will actually talk about some of that at some point this week, but I hope that we are grateful for the true blessing that that really is, that we can come to know Him and to live in Him. Roger called me a friend of God just now, and I couldn't be more flattered by that, but I also felt a sting of guilt for that, for just knowing that I'm not the friend of God that I could be. And I want to improve in that. And I hope that our lessons and our time spent this week helps you with that, as studying these things has helped me some as well. So, let me start with this. Have you ever heard of the activity known as free diving? Are you familiar with this? There are documentaries about this thing, so some of you have probably seen those or seen some of the YouTube videos. If you're not familiar with it, here's the rundown. It's a competitive sport where the goal is to go as deep as possible with no scuba gear and still make it back up alive. That's the game. That's a game, right? Does anybody else feel a sudden sense of panic at just even thinking about that? Because I sure do. And most of these... The like competitive places, most of these are amateurs, okay? These are people like you and me. Maybe, you know, they're pretty fit. They've practiced this some. They can handle some pressure. And so most of them go down to like 60 to 75 feet. But the world record for free diving, just to go down, turn around, and come back up not dead, is 446 feet below the surface of the ocean. That blows my mind, and it scares me to death. Scares me to death to think about what that must be like, to just go as deep as you can and still be able to come up for air and not be dead. As you can imagine, though, a lot of people do die in this sport. It's one of those things that you're like, how could you try this and it not result in some fatalities? And so they do happen with some regularity, because holding your breath so long obviously risks your life. But even if it doesn't do that, some of these people, they come up and their brains are deoxygenated, they have restricted blood flow, they're suffering from the bends from being down to that depth so suddenly and coming up so suddenly, and a lot of them come up hallucinating and just completely like have lost their minds, you know. So this whole thing just kind of blows my mind to think about, why would you want to go to such a depth if it comes with so much risk? Now, here's the risky thing that I'm doing with this message. I actually think that's a good illustration for how we should approach our spiritual lives. And I know that's risky by presenting it as this dangerous, terrifying, scary thing, and then saying that's what we should be after, but I really believe it. I really think this is what we should be after, that we are trying to get as deep as we can go, knowing that it will not hurt us. But from the outside looking in, from the surface looking down, it sure seems like it's a lot. It sure seems really scary. It seems like there's a lot of risk in this, that if we go that deep, we might not come back up again. But that's what we're after. We're trying to live the kind of life for God and in God that is completely committed all the way as deep as we can go. You see, we kind of tend to live our lives on the surface level. We kind of tend to just ride the ups and downs of whatever the waves bring to us, kind of watching daily life go by in a blur of calendars and activities and relationships and tasks. But below the surface, there's some extra peace. You know how the ocean does that, right? The top is all messed up. There's craziness on top. But below the surface, there's calm and there's peace. And there's a whole rich environment full of life. That's what we're seeking when we come to know God, brothers and sisters. We're seeking the kind of life that goes deeper, that connects with Him on the deepest kind of level in our minds and our hearts and in our souls. And when we can pursue that, number one, we will find there is no end to the depth. You can go as deep with God as you want to go, and you will not hit the bottom. But number two, we will find the peace and the life-giving power that He has the deeper we get into Him. And so in this message, and really, this is the core message of the series, okay? Everything stems from this. But in this message, I want us to talk about deepening our lives and deepening particularly our sense of connection with God Himself. The sense of connection that we have with God Himself. Now, this is the most important part of today's message, and so I'm going to spend the longest on this one point. You'll see the others go by in a blur after we're done here. But this one, we're going to camp out here for a little bit because this is the hub of all the other concepts that we are going to talk about this week. If we can learn God, if we can know Him and love Him and see Him in every aspect of our lives, if we can value Him above all else and seek Him more than anything else, then everything else will fall into place around that. If God is at the center of our lives, then everything else will be centered. And I hope that that doesn't sound like a concept that a preacher invented out of thin air. Because talking about being close to God and centered in Him and making Him Himself first in our lives, that's something that He's been trying to teach us from the very beginning. From the very beginning, God has been offering us a sense of closer closeness, of deeper depth in that relationship from antiquity. Like in the Garden of Eden, what was the best thing about that place? What was the best thing about the Garden of Eden? Was it the weather? No. Was it the food? No. Was it the terrain? No. Was it just like the beauty of the landscape? No, it wasn't that. Was it the peacefulness with the animals? If they got along with snakes, I could maybe see you making a case for that, but no. No, what was the best thing about Eden? It was that they were with God. In fact, the only time that we read about them not being with God is after they have sinned and He has to come looking for them because they've separated themselves from Him somehow. They were with God. There was a closeness there that is unparalleled. And ever since then, God has been drawing His people back to Himself. And so you see this in the law. Now, we don't think of the law that way. We tend to think that the law would be put in place as a way to kind of rein in unruly children. We think of God's law as a way to punish disobedience by correcting it and making it sure that these kids behave themselves from here on out, right? But that's not the way that God described it. If you look in Deuteronomy chapter 4, this is one of my favorite passages to talk about this. And actually, even before we get to that one, if you look at the first commandment, the first of the Ten Commandments in Exodus chapter 20 in verse 3, through the law, God said, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. Now, I've pondered this one quite a bit, actually, and I've realized a handful of things about it. Number one, it is a very forceful command. You will not do this, okay? And I understand it that way. This is the father giving his children a hard, strict rule. You will not do this. But here's one of the other things that I've realized about this command. This is God saying, don't let anything separate you from me. You will have no other gods between yourself and me. Because what God is asking His people for is closeness to the depths of our heart. And so the first commandment is, don't separate yourself from me. Because the gift of the law is something that brings people closer. Now, that does get us to Deuteronomy chapter 4. And in Deuteronomy 4, we have this beautiful explanation from God about the purpose of His law. And again, it is not just an oppressive set of fences to hold unruly children in, to rein them in and keep them contained. What He says it is a bit of wisdom from God. That this will be your wisdom in the sight of the peoples who, when they hear the words of this law, they will be impressed at your wisdom. And they will say, what other nation has a God so near to them as those Israelites' God is close to them? That's a really wonderful thing when you think about it, isn't it? Because again, we kind of look especially at the law of Moses and we go, my goodness, that was oppressive. That was difficult. Everything about that was tough. But God says the whole thing was a gift and an invitation to come closer to Him and to accept His closeness among them. This is the kind of depth that we want to add to our lives as well, brothers and sisters. This is what God has been calling His people to for a long time. Now, further down the timeline, you run into these two places called the tabernacle and the temple. And in those two places, God was showing again that He wants His people to be close to Him. If you've been in Bible classes and you've seen the diagrams of the layouts of the tabernacle and the temple, you know that from the time you start coming into the gate, there is this progression that you can come closer and closer with each step once a sacrifice is made and once you've been washed and purified and once the incense has been offered and once a year when that veil is opened, you can come all the way, at least one person anyway, can come all the way into the presence of God. Now, I understand that also in that whole diagram and in that whole explanation, what that means is there are clear boundaries where you can't come any closer to the presence of God. So He's teaching us both things at the same time. If you're an unholy person, you can't be close to God. But here's what fascinates me about the whole thing. Where was the tabernacle when they were in the wilderness? It was in the middle of their camp. What was God telling them by saying, put me in the middle of everybody? And where was the temple when they settled in the land? It was up on a high hilltop, kind of in the middle of the land. And what was God saying by choosing that place to put His name forever? He was saying to them, look up to me and remember, I have chosen to be with you. The tabernacle and the temple communicate that God wants to be close to His people. And what's remarkable about that is in the story of Jesus, in the moment that He dies on the cross, what happens in the temple? Yes, there's the earthquake, and yes, people rise from the dead, and all of those are like worthy of their own sermon. Each of those events is worthy of its own sermon. But what happens in the temple? The veil that separates everything else from the direct presence of God is ripped in half from top to bottom. The way to God's presence splits wide open through the death of Jesus Christ. And it is an invitation for all of time for God's people, the church, to be close to Him. In fact, to be all the way back into His presence, to come all the way back into Eden. It's when our faith is in Him and we join ourselves to others who share in that we complete this closeness that God has been inviting us to for millennia. I absolutely love that moment when the text says that the temple veil was torn. It's so moving to me because that veil, that thing was, you know, this thick. It was a solid woven piece of fabric. It was 60 feet tall and it was over 6 inches thick, and the whole thing rips without a hand touching it. Who's sending that message? God Himself says, you come back to me. This is a powerful demonstration, a powerful statement of God's continual offer of deeper connection with us. That's the calling that's supposed to define our lives, brothers and sisters. We are supposed to be the people who accept that offer of deeper connection every single day. We are the people who have been called out of darkness and into the light of His presence. And that's where we're supposed to live our lives. That's what this deeper connection is all about. And I know that that sounds palatable on a Sunday morning in a church assembly when you've just gone through all the Bible history and all the ways that you see God calling us closer to Himself. But I got to tell you, and this is me being completely honest here, that is much, much harder in the up and down, wave toss, surface level way that we tend to live our lives. It is so much harder to think of that and explore that and lean fully into that invitation when our lives are defined by the pressure of our family relationships and the expectations at work that we have to live up to, and the people around us that are living and dying and celebrating and mourning, and they expect us to be involved in all of that with them. The anxiety of disappointing other people, the struggles with our own health and fitness, the relentless, constant noise of society that comes to us through social media and news and the people around us and the podcasts we listen to and the books that we're told, you got to read this one. It's relentless. The pressure from every direction is relentless, and the waves go up and down, and we ride them and we wonder, is there any way to get out of this furious pace of the everyday and deepen our closeness with God? There is a way. And what it's going to require is some deliberate efforts toward simplicity, toward decluttering our minds and making room for what matters most in our minds and our hearts. We're going to talk about that in our second message this morning, but that's really one of the keys to making this happen. Because this matters, brothers and sisters. This deeper connection with God matters a great deal. What is the greatest instruction that we have ever been given? The single greatest command that we have ever been told by God? Love Him with all of yourself. That kind of connection, that increasingly deep connection, is what this is all about. And He has been offering it to us for so long. We better have the faith to make sure that we accept the offer. Now, that's the most important thing that we could say in this process of deepening our lives, of diving deeper. But these others are parts of it too, and so let's just kind of quickly address four more areas where we need to allow ourselves to dive below the surface. First of those is we need deeper awareness. We are increasingly encouraged to skim or speed read our books, to watch shorter and shorter videos and movies, to automate our jobs and the analysis of our businesses so that we don't have to spend the time and the depth in those analyses. We are reminded to settle for quick rundowns of the day with our families, quick rundowns of books rather than reading the whole thing, and to read only the headlines and not the real articles. And I got to tell you, that's the societal way to do it, but we're kind of tempted toward the same tendencies in religion. In religion, there are always segments that are moving more toward TED Talks than sermons, toward reading shorter and more easy read versions of the Bible, whether they contain the fullness of truth or not. We tend in certain segments to preach felt needs and what we call real life concepts because we don't want to bore anybody with the depth of the Word of God. We tend toward the shallows again and again and again and again. We tend toward a lesser awareness of the things of God. But what we need is a deeper awareness of life and Him. Not wider, okay? I don't mean a wider awareness of life around us. I don't mean we need more information. I don't mean that we need diversified attention. What we need is focused, deeper awareness of the things that really matter. We need awareness of God and His ways more than anything else. I've recently done a really deep dive, at least for me, on the book of Ecclesiastes. Deep dive, interesting. Didn't even mean that pun, but it fits the sermon. I was amazed at several points reading it at Solomon's transparency, where he says, here are all the things that I've learned, but here's all the stuff that has escaped me. I still can't figure this thing out. I still can't figure out this sense of where I'm at in the universe. I can't figure out anything that goes beyond my own lifetime. The secret things belong to God. But what's remarkable about that to me is that He tried. Like, you could have known on the front end that you wouldn't be able to figure out everything, but He tried anyway. Because there is a reward in the depth of knowing God and seeking Him and wanting that fuller awareness of Him and His things. And I hope that that's what you want too. I hope that there is always a drive to know the things of the faith better, to know the words that have taught us about God better, to know the people that share this faith with you better. And I hope that that's another driving force for us, that what we become more and more aware of is the needs of the people around us. Again, we just tend to let life go by us in a blur. And it's like walking through a crowd. You walk through a crowd of 300 people and you don't notice 300 individuals. You just notice a crowd. But that crowd is made up of individuals. And to walk through a crowd quickly, you pass everybody by. You don't notice. You don't connect. You don't know. You don't have the awareness of what those people really need. But my goodness, Jesus didn't do that, and we would be so much better if we could learn to do it like Him. To be aware on a deeper level of the needs of the people around us. And then we must deepen our awareness of ourselves. Not so that we can be kinder to ourselves or that we can elevate ourselves or anything like that, but so that we can examine our own hearts. And we can seek God better, change our habits, change our attitudes, change our words into ways that more accurately glorify Him. I hope that a deeper awareness of, especially of religious things, helps you, especially the things of God. I hope that that helps you, that that's something that you see the value in pursuing. Because the religion that you learn from reels and quips and memes and cliches simply isn't good enough, brothers and sisters. The religion that you learn from speakers and sermons and summaries of the truth and Bible classes, even in churches like this one or the one where I'm at in Colorado, that's not good enough either. The religion that we need to know is the truth from God. And you're going to have some pretty deep awareness to feel like you've really plumbed the depths of that one. And so let's work on that. Now, doing that right is going to require us to slow our pace a little bit. And so we're going to talk about that this afternoon. We're going to talk about the importance of not doing everything all at once, but just increasing our depth of awareness of the things that matter most. Now, awareness of the things of God is important enough, but the challenge with that is when we know that we should have that, but we find that, again, kind of looking from the surface down, we go, I don't know if I really want to pursue that. I should. I don't know if I really want to. And that kind of gets us to this second one here in this little group of four, which is that we need to be seeking deeper desires in our increased closeness with God. I think that desires are something that we can actually control. I know most of the time we think about that, we're like, well, you either want this or you don't. You can't really change what you want. But you can. It just takes some time. And it takes some diligence to do that. But you can change what you want. And I think that's an important realization that really comes to us through the concept of self-control. When you think about all the times that the Bible talks about self-control, like Paul talking to the ruler where he spoke about the importance of self-control and the judgment to come, that concept is there to help us govern our minds and our hearts. Yes, it changes our actions and our words first, but Jesus said that the things that proceed out of the mouth, they go into the heart, they change who we are. And so those things, they do change our very nature given enough time. And I think, if I'm reading the Bible correctly, that given enough time, those things will actually help us to change the fact that we are tempted by certain evils. Now, I don't want to make too much of that point because I fully understand there may be temptations that you pray to God and you ask Him, please take this away. I don't want it. I want to serve You. And He does not remove that from your life. I know for some people that have, especially that have been in the throes of addiction, the temptations never go away. You just learn to manage them. I totally understand that. But I do think that in a lot more cases, the longer we serve God, the sweeter He grows, and the more disgusted we become by the things that we used to want. our desires actually change toward wanting Him that much more. And I think if we can learn that, if we can start to accept that, and we can start to move toward that truth, then we're getting to the depths that really all of us have been invited to by God. You can see this awareness in some of the ways that the Bible writers prayed. From Psalm 51, after David committed his sin with Bathsheba, he prayed to God, "Purge me with hyssop, and I shall be clean. Wash me, and I shall be whiter than snow." So he wants forgiveness of sin, but here's the next thing. "Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. Restore to me the joy of your salvation." What is he asking God for? He's asking to give me the desires for good things. Create a pure heart that wants good. I don't want what I did with Bathsheba. I don't even want to want that anymore. Create in me a clean heart. And then this from the 73rd Psalm, from one of Israel's, one of the writers of Israel's worship songs, the 73rd Psalm, Asaph says, "Whom have I in heaven but you? And there is nothing on earth that I desire besides you." Would that we had the kind of hearts that could say that with all honesty. The sons of Korah, another group that wrote worship songs for Israel, they said this in the 84th Psalm, "A day in your courts is better than 1,000 elsewhere. I would rather be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than dwell in the tents of wickedness." What do they want? They want to be in the presence of God. That is their desire. And then Jesus himself commended those people throughout all of time who hunger and thirst for righteousness. That's their desire, and that's a deep desire. That's something that changes who you are and governs your life in every way. When I was early into preaching, somebody gave me a book called The Elements of Preaching by Warren Wiersbe. And one of the things that I remember most from that book was this little line where he said, "Don't tell people how they ought to feel about the gospel. Preach the gospel to them in such a way that they will feel connected to Christ, and just let that take care of itself." And so it's been tricky, and I've tried really hard through most of my sermons to realize that it kind of doesn't work to just stand in front of a group of people and say, "This is how you should feel about a thing. You should be more disgusted by sin. You should be more excited about worship and religion." Like, okay. It doesn't really work to say these are the feelings that you should have. However, it is possible over the course of time to let our thinking take over our feelings. And when our thinking is right, brothers and sisters, on these things of God, the desires for the things of God do increase. We really do start to want things that we hadn't wanted before. Now, again, do I mean to say that God will always take away all of our temptations? No, I'm afraid I can't say that. But I do think more often than not, if we pray to Him, "Help us to want You more and to know You better," He will grant that prayer. I found in my own life that when I truly seek God, even when temptations do arise, my particular temptations do arise in my life, I'm much more disgusted by them, and it is much easier to resist the devil and let him flee from me, because I have chosen to want God. And those deeper desires can be part of your life as well. Now, doing this is going to require us to surrender ourselves to Christ, to release our grip on the things that we tend to want for ourselves, and that's what we intend to talk about in Monday night's lesson, to continue this idea of closeness and deepening our lives. Add to that, that when we seek God the way that we should, our purpose in life will go deeper as well. Everybody in here has known somebody, or you may have been somebody who just seems to lack all sense of purpose. They can't seem to pull it together. They can't seem to find one thing that will just carry them forward, where they'll put themselves into this thing and really find some drive. We've all experienced that, either in ourselves or in somebody else. But when we seek God and we deepen our relationship with Him, we're never going to have that problem. because there are always two great commands that are governing us and that are giving us a sense of purpose. The one is to love God with all of myself, and the other is to love others more than myself. And if I can learn to do those two things, then I will have all the purpose I need, all the sense of drive that I need to accomplish something and to become something worthwhile in this life and the next. How many of the great advances in the arts and the sciences and medicine and political justice have come about by the efforts of a person or a group who was either seeking God more deeply or was loving others more than themselves? Names like Galileo and Michael Faraday were men who were believers in Jesus, and they committed themselves to finding the truth about God's world because they believed in God's Word. People like William Wilberforce, who led the abolition of the slave trade in Great Britain. Why? Because he saw his neighbor and he loved his neighbor like himself, and he didn't want to see them enslaved anymore. People like Florence Nightingale in the world of medicine, who pioneered nursing techniques that we still use today, well over 100 years ago, because she saw people in need and she loved her neighbor more than herself. And countless others could be named, and countless others we've forgotten their names, who in the pursuit of doing God's will and becoming a blessing to others, they found a sense of purpose that would not be stopped. And they gave the world something wonderful because it was in service to God. I hope that that's what we can find as well. That we can find a contentment with just knowing God and let that contentment become an ideal bigger than ourselves. I hope that we can learn to embrace our gifts and see the purpose in them as God has given them to us, so that then we can go and be a blessing in His world and glorify Him. Lord willing, that's what we're going to talk about on Tuesday night. And then finally, if we continue to go deeper with God, if we continue to seek Him more fully the way that we should, then we are ultimately and always going to find deeper love. So many preachers have repeated the cliche statement, because it's not just cliche, it is true, that if you could cut into God, you would find love all the way through. The closer you get to Him, the more love you will come to know, because He first loved us. It is His very nature. And the deeper we go in that, it's not like free diving, that the deeper you go, the more life you're guaranteed to lose, the more love you're guaranteed to find. That is the gift, because God has loved us so much that He gave His only Son. And if we want to be close to Him, we will be rewarded with an ever-increasing joy in that kind of love. Now, you know as well as I do that doing that is going to require some self-sacrifice. God gave His only Son. That's His sacrifice. The question for us is, will we be willing to love others and love Him well enough to make sacrifices as well? And if the Lord wills, that's what we're going to talk about on Wednesday night to close out this series. Closeness, deepening our lives, knowing Him better, and getting more and more and more connected with Him is what this is all about. That is the purpose of mankind, and I really truly believe that. We were created to know God. That's why He put Himself and us together in the beginning. And the only way that we will find and receive our fullness is when we come to know Him again. Free diving faces the challenge of going deeper, even when all of our instincts tell us that's too risky. Can I tell you that I think, along with an illustration for how the mentality we have toward God, I actually think this is a great metaphor and a great comparison to baptism as well. Now you're really scaring people, Dan. I know. Yeah. But the Holy Spirit says in Romans chapter 6 and verse 1 that baptism is where we bury the old man of sin and we are raised to walk in newness of life. The depths of that passage are profound, changing us to the very heart and soul of who we are. That a portion of us, matter of fact, the whole of me is buried, is crucified and buried in the waters of baptism, so that what rises again is something altogether new, is someone altogether new. The depths of that are a profound and wonderful truth. But there's a risk in that truth too, isn't there? Just like a free dive, we face death when we allow ourselves to go to that depth. We face the death of who we are. The old man of sin and selfishness, he will die under the pressure of being buried in the waters of baptism, coming in contact with the blood of Jesus Christ. He will die in that pressure. But once we have faced that death, and Christ has brought us through it, there is a new kind of life with a depth and breadth and light and power and glory that is indescribable, and that death no longer has power over. It is unsurpassed by any form of surface level living. The depth of knowing God is truly mind-blowing. And so if you are ready to commit your life to God, to go through, yes, with the risk, but also to receive the reward of increased closeness with Him, then why don't you come and talk to somebody up here, whether it's me or one of the preachers from this church or one of the elders or somebody, about letting us baptize you in His name to bury that old man of sin and rise to new life. If we can help you with that, why don't you come forward and let us know while we stand and sing this hymn together.